All right, you know how we operate on Thursday night. Any question you want to ask about the Bible, no question is dumb, no question is stupid. And you had your hand up first, so we'll get you first. Thank you. My goodness, you stole them all. Good girl. All right, Charles, you're up, buddy.
Do I get a mic? Can I just...
Well...
I can.
Yeah, we'll get you a mic here. He's coming your way. While we're moving that way, I want to welcome all our people on YouTube tonight or on the website following us. And
Ron Charles.
Where's our mic? We got a question up front here. Let's go. Okay, listen up.
So me and Chris were talking about...
you and who?
My
oh, Chris,
verse.
Okay.
We were talking about Revelation, and we're talking about the tribulation saints and what happens to their glorified body whenever they get to heaven. Or how will they get to heaven, in a sense, because they don't have a glorified body?
Who is they?
The tribulation saints.
Okay. His question is deals with the tribulation saints in the tribulation period, and how do they get to heaven if they don't have glorified bodies? That's a normal misconception of how. Come over here to Matthew chapter. It's an excellent question. It's just most of the answers you're going to get are not very excellent. Matthew chapter 25. Now, the common teaching, which is a bad teaching, but it's a generalization, so it's okay in a general form, but it isn't true in a doctrinal form, okay? And, you know, if you taught everything or said everything about the Bible the way that it's really taught, it would be so complicated to the average basic person, so they don't do that. And obviously the standard teaching is that when you die, when you get saved, if you die, you go to heaven to spend an eternity with the Lord Jesus Christ. That's basically not true. We get the idea that, you know, when we die, or the rapture takes place, or through all of eternity, that we walk the streets of gold, we're up there in heaven and all that stuff. That's just simply not true. That is a generalization of about 50 doctrines that if you tried to explain them all to somebody about heaven, that you would lose them before you got outside the first verse. So let me, in a general way also, put it into a concept for you and perspective for you. His question here is an excellent question, and it's a young question that I would have asked when I was your age trying to figure it all out. And it's commendable. That's how you learn. And his question is, in the tribulation people, there are people who do not get glorified bodies. How do they get up into heaven to be with the Lord? And, of course, the answer is they never go to heaven to be with the Lord. And the verse for that, or the passage for that, is Matthew chapter 25. Verse 31. Now, this is dealing with the tribulation. In fact, in chapter 25, in the first 30 verses, you have been dealing with the 10 virgins, 5 were wise and 5 were foolish. Those are the tribulation saints. We've been talking about these people in Proverbs, wise and a foolish man. Here you have it defined even better for you as 10 virgins, and whenever you find the word virgins plural, it'll always be a reference to tribulation saints. So, and it comes down to the bridegroom, Christ coming, 5 go, 5 don't go. Now, here is the key that you want to see here and the answer to his question. when the Son of Man shall come in his glory and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. This is the second coming of Christ. This is the second, the first story about the second coming of Christ is 25:1 through 30. The second story picks up here. But this is what I want you to see. All right, he says, the Son of Man come in his glory, and all the holy angels come with him, and he's sitting upon the throne. Now, that throne is in Jerusalem, not in heaven. This is the start of the millennial reign of Christ. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another as a shepherd divideth the sheep from the goats. Now, this is nations here. This is after the second coming of Christ. This will be all the nations and the people in those nations who did not follow the Antichrist. Some of them were raptured out in the preceding passage, but now they're back. And the tribulation saints never get heaven. They get the millennial kingdom on this earth that is a literal visible kingdom that was promised to Abraham in Genesis chapter 15, which we know as the kingdom of heaven. Now, you could obviously see how that would be hard to explain to somebody that didn't know anything about it. So we all use the term, we're going to go to heaven to be with the Lord. It's a generalization of a truth that it's okay when you're a young Christian, but as you grow, these are things you need to learn, just as you are, Charles, and you're doing a great job at it. How'd your prayer group go Sunday?
Good.
You got some good guys in there. That's good. That's really good. I'm glad. I'm really proud of you. And then it says this, verse 34, then the king shall say unto them on his right hand, come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungered and you gave me food, I was naked and you clothed me and all that stuff. But I want you to see in verse 40. And the king shall answer and say unto them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto the one of the least of my brethren, ye have done it unto me. These are the nations that helped the Jew during the tribulation period. Now watch what happens. Then shall he say unto them on the left hand, depart from me, ye cursed, unto everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. Now those are the goats, the ones that did not help the nation of Israel. Then he says in verse 42, for I was hungered and you gave me no meat, and da-da-da-da-da-da. And then he says in verse 46, and these shall go away into everlasting punishment. That's the ones that didn't help the Jews, but the righteous unto life eternal. Now, that life eternal has nothing to do with going to heaven. It has to do with the millennial government that is put in place at the second coming of Christ. These people never do get glorified bodies. They are in natural bodies, and they're subject to dying over and over and over and over again unless something intervenes and changes that. Now, come over to Revelation chapter 22, verse 14, and I'll show you how that gets changed this time. Blessed are they that do his commandments, and that may have the right to the tree of life and may enter through the gates into the city. So here again, you find a tree of life in the beginning of the Bible in Genesis 3. You have a tree of life again in Revelation chapter 22, one at the beginning and one in the end. Obviously, the one in the beginning got canceled out because of man's sin. The one in the end here shows you that the Bible is a complete circle. It starts, it ends where it starts. And God's plan in Genesis for Adam and Eve will be God's plan within his government when he comes back at the second coming. And that's, you know, we won't get into all of that. But it goes to show you this is where you have it. Look at verse 34. And then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, those are the ones that helped the Jew, Come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. They're not inheriting heaven. They're getting a kingdom. And that kingdom is the kingdom of heaven, the literal visible kingdom. Now, we get glorified bodies, but just to destroy the myth a little bit farther, come over to Revelation chapter 21. And I get it. The idea that, you know, when we die, we all go to heaven, you know, in eternity with the Lord. I get it. It's a generalization, and I'm not fighting it at all. But you're going to find out that even us in glorified bodies do not go to heaven and spend an eternity with the Lord. How do I say this without sounding, I don't even know how I'd sound. If all we would do, or anybody would do, after we all dead and gone and we all get resurrected and we all would go to heaven, if that's all the farther God's plan was, then we're in trouble. I mean, no disrespect, but, and I get it, most Baptist preachers get up and preach that forever, for eternity, we'll glorify God around the throne, da-da-da-da-da-da. And he says that because he doesn't know anything about the Bible. So that sounds good, and the stupid people in his church who know less than he does all say amen. And we go home with the idea that all through eternity, we just bounce around, praise around the throne, giving glory to God. I guess by that time, you'll have eternal vocal cords, so you'll never lose your voice. But it's, if that's all the plan God has, then we're in trouble. And of course, the reason why the Bible starts with a tree of life in Genesis 3 in a garden and ends in a tree of life in a garden, and if you go back to Ezekiel chapter 36, verse 35, you'll find that it completely tells you that when the Lord comes back and sets up his kingdom, it's just like the Garden of Eden. It's a complete circle. But guys are so inept when it comes to the Bible and have no clue of how the Bible really unfolds itself that we get stuck with these generalizations. And these generalizations are general truth, but they're not doctrinal in any way, shape, or form, and they're a far cry from the reality of the Bible and God's plan. He told us in Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6 and 7, of the increase of his government and peace there shall be no end. That tells us that there is a plan that God has that goes out through eternity. You have three people groups in the Bible. You have the Gentiles, you have the Jews, and you have the body of Christ. The Gentiles and the Jews never get glorified bodies. The only ones that do is the church. Along with that, in eternity, you have three destinations. You have a new heaven, a new earth, and a new Jerusalem. And even the church, the Christians, don't go to heaven. They go to Revelation chapter 21, and I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And I, John, saw the holy city coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adored for her husband. This is the new Jerusalem, and if you'll note, it comes out of heaven. So, literally, I'm sorry, from a Bible doctrinal standpoint, nobody spends an eternity in heaven. You're either in the kingdom of heaven, which is on this earth, in the new heavens, on this new earth, or you're in the spiritual kingdom, the kingdom of God, and your abode is the new Jerusalem. But even in that is just the base of operation for God's plan being fulfilled out through eternity. And I won't get into all of that tonight. But so to answer your question, it's a general truth that is taught today that isn't generally true. It's where you go to explainify God in the Bible in a very simple way to people who have no grasp of the truth. Once a person gets saved and they begin to grow, just like I did, just like you do, you'll come to the point where you'll see the bigger picture of it all. but it's a safe place to start. Because, you know, if you tried to go through all of that with somebody before they got saved or even after they're a baby Christian, it would be a nightmare. So a lot of things in the Bible are brought down to a generalization so people can understand it. There's nothing wrong with that as long as you don't stay there. Problem with most Baptist preachers and most Christians, that's where they stay. So they really get out of whack and everything. One of the things that for you to understand is, I was going to announce this at the end. This coming Saturday, we have our Bible Institute. We have finished up the structural stuff. Now we're going to go to work on what is probably the most crucial, important aspect of learning your Bible, and that'll be going through dispensationalism. And it'll probably take us all summer to get through that. But I'm opening that up that anybody, if you're not in the Institute, but you want to get that down and you want to get a, or maybe a refresher course on it, this would be your time to do this if you're going to want to get that. Because it is, without a doubt, if you don't get the dispensations down in the Bible, you're never going to get the Bible. And there's a lot of confusion on it, and there's a lot of things that getting these dispensations down will do for you, and much of it is what Charles asked tonight. So you got to get that all in perspective. Nothing will, when you get to this point in your life, if we are an institute, we've covered a lot of material, nothing will pull it all together for you now quicker than understanding dispensationalism in the Bible and how we approach the Bible from a dispensational standpoint, understanding what dispensations are and how they impact the Bible itself and what God is doing. So I just throw that out there for you that want to be part of that. Yes, sir. Along with his question? Yeah.
So I wanted to clarify a little bit. The question is also like Old Testament saints and during the tribulation when people actually die, are their bodies physically resurrected? Or, like, are they in limbo? Or, like, when Christ leads captivity captive, do they go to the third heaven?
No. In a tribulation period, to make a long story short, when they die, they go back to Abraham's bosom.
Okay.
Yeah. Because in Revelation 20, the great white throne judgment, he says he brings up death and hell. Okay. Death is Abraham's bosom. Hell is the bad side where the rich man is. Torment.
So the Old Testament saints, when he leads captivity captive out of Abraham's bosom, where are they? Because those aren't glorified bodies either.
Right. And the only answer I can give you to that is, and without going off the cliff here, they would be in the same state that anybody died stepping out into eternity where there is no time. When he led captivity captive, they would be like anybody else that we talked about death and dying. They step out into eternity and there's no time. So it's not relevant to when they stepped out. It's all relevant. It doesn't matter when they died or stepped out or when they went up. It's a matter of when they all arrived. It's the second coming of Christ.
Okay.
So that's the difference between us still laboring through time and them being in a place that is just like blinking your eyes and there's no time. Okay. So, yeah.
Makes sense.
New question, anything related?
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Well, a few weeks ago, you talked about just like the Vietnam War and JFK and kind of why we went there and dealing with like the Catholic Church. And so I was just wondering if you could explain the events that took place, I guess, dealing with JFK, the Vietnam War, and then ending with like the Bay of Pigs and how that had to do with the Bible and, you know, the devil's counter-movement to God, kind of lay that all out.
Yeah, absolutely. In 30 seconds or less, I can do that.
You want him to give him my book?
Yeah, you laugh all you want, but when I get moving, I'm moving. The problem is, do I want to move? Okay. Now, his question had to do with a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about we were talking about the how our government had destroyed so many other governments, and you know we get connected with the investigation of the last 2 years or so with Russia in intervening in our elections. And, you know, and I get it, a lot of it is just nothing, a political thing that they want to go after Trump. I get that. I understand that. But I also understand that the people in our government, when it comes to learning the lessons of history, are about as dumb as a stump. And they care nothing about reality of truth. All they care about is finding political solutions to stay in power. And, you know, they have become, and maybe they were all this way, always this way. It's just more prevalent now than it was. Maybe they're all this, has always been this way. But they, without a doubt, our government is the most hypocritical government on the planet in every way, shape, or form. Our society is a very hypocritical society. And, you know, and the longer it goes, obviously the worse it gets. You know, and we were talking about that Sunday, how we made a big deal about Russia intervening when, since World War II, there have probably been, I don't know, I gave you 14 or 15 governments that our government didn't approve of. So the CIA went in and either worked with the rebel factors or just went in and overthrew the government so they could you know, make it a democracy, because the dictator there was, you know, and it was talking about grabbing the dog by the ears. We did it in Afghanistan back when the day, and look how that turned out for us. We did it in, I'll talk about it here in a moment, in Vietnam, and look how that worked out for us. It just doesn't work. And, you know, it's a thing where most people, they don't see it. I was reading this week, and here again, this goes to show you the hypocrisy. Kate Smith was a great singer, and Kate Smith was a very famous singer. I can see by your faces, nobody knows who she is. Okay. All right. Roy Rogers was a cowboy. Kate Smith was one of America's singers for America. Very patriotic at all these things. She became a legend. I forget now which baseball team it was that they put a, they would always start the seventh inning with one of her songs.
God bless America, the Yankees.
The Yankees, okay. And it came to light here in the last month or so that back in 1930, she had sang some songs that are viewed as racist today. Now, it didn't seem to mind that when she was singing those songs, she was singing with a black guy and they were having a good time with it. Now they have put a dark cape over her statue and are removing the statue because she's racist. Down in the South, they've removed all the Civil War memorials for all of the Civil War generals. And, of course, the Confederate flag now is deemed a racist flag. And I look at all of that, and to me, you know, once you get into the Bible, it just kind of cuts through the fog like a set of bright fog lights on the front of your truck. And it just, I look at that, especially the Kate Smith thing. And I say to myself, okay, here's the New York Yankees who are going to take her statue out because back in 1930, she sang two songs that had to do with, as perceived today, with race. By the way, back in the 30s, it wasn't perceived as racism, but that's another story. But it's okay. How many ever saw the movie 42 Jackie Robinson. Do you see how baseball treated him?
Oh,
Do you see how that the when he's coming up to bat, the manager for the other team is calling him some of the most racist names on this planet, making racial statements about his wife and all of those things? Why haven't we banned baseball? Why can Kate Smith back and do two songs in the 1930s and get pulled and whacked for it? And do you realize that when Jackie Robinson, who was the first black baseball player, when he would go with the New Yankees, didn't he play with the Yankees? Who he played with? Huh? Brooklyn Dodgers. That's close to the New York Yankees. You realize that he couldn't eat with the rest of the team? You realize that he went down to play some team down south, and the sheriff's department came out and ordered him off the field, that they were going to arrest him because black men don't have any right playing a white man's game? I mean, where's the outrage for baseball? See? You know what the answer is? Hypocrites. Hypocrites. We'll take all the Civil War generals out there, but you'll still leave George Washington on your dollar bill when he had slaves. Ben Franklin's on your $100 bill, and he not only had slaves, he fathered children through black women that were his slaves. Now, you want to turn in all of your memorabilia from the, turn in all your money to me. Get rid of them racist dollar bills, man. I got to be careful saying that on here because, boy, there'll be a lot of Baptist preachers that pick up on that and be using it on Sunday to get their money. They can. My point is this. We live in the most screwed up world that it has ever been. And our country, our government, it's all political hypocrisy. It's just simply that. We make issues over things that were not issues in the day. We can't just move past it because we have an agenda. And when you get into the Bible opens up all these things. And some of the statements that I'm going to make tonight, you know, to the average person, if you would just say them without explaining them, they would think that you were nuts. I grew up during the Cold War, as many of you older folks did. And the Cold War was after the World War II, which was a hot war. And it's called the Cold War because, and I actually had a girl one time ask me if it was a Cold War because it started in winter. No, Jamie, it didn't. It was a Cold War because we never really went to war. But it was the threat of war with the birth of the nuclear age. And we had World War I, then we had World War II, then we had Korea, then we had Vietnam. And from Vietnam, you know, we have all these little faction wars in the Middle East and everything as we move toward the second coming of Christ. We fear the Russians. We fear North Koreans. We fear ISIS and all the terrorists. And as far as anybody that's a Bible believer, that is all a smokescreen to the real threat that is and always has been, and that will be the Roman Catholic Church. You will see when I'm done here that at some point the Muslims and the Catholics will link up together. They linked up before in history. I'll show you where. When Yasser Arafat wanted to start the Palestinian regime and wanted liberty for Palestinians against the Jews, the Pope recognized the Palestinian state, had Yasser Arafat over in the Vatican, and here he is, again, you talk about hypocrisy, here he is, he's a Muslim who is supposed to hate the Western world, but his wife is a blue-eyed blonde, yes, she is Roman Catholic. There's a little verse back in the book of Revelation that most people don't mess with, don't know what to do with it. Certainly if you're teaching the book of Revelation, that's one you'll hop skip over. But it's a place where he says that in the tribulation, they're not to hurt the wine and the oil. And commentators for years have never been able to figure that out. But anybody with a, you know, sixth grade education that can read and understand the concept of history can. The wine represents the Roman Catholic Church. The oil represents the Muslims. And they're going to get connected. You say, yeah, but there's a lot of differences between them. Well, you know what? There's a lot of differences between all the factions of the Muslims. They kill each other as much as they want to kill us. But they all get together on one thing. They hate the nation of Israel. And oh, there's a lot of factions between the Muslims and the Catholics, but they all get together on one thing. They both hate the nation of Israel. The Pope never recognized the state of Israel to this day. To this day, have never recognized the state of Israel, but he brought Yasser Arafat over there and recognized the Palestinian state. That's what you got. That's what you got. Now, let me tell you a story. And this is a great story, and this is... this puts the 20th century into total perspective for you, if not all history. The Roman Catholic Church has been behind almost every plot going back after the Reformation. Back in 1605, there was what was called the Gunpowder Plot to kill the Parliament and James. And they were bringing in barrels of gunpowder underneath Parliament and was going to blow it up, hence the Gunpowder Plot. That was in 1605. And it was orchestrated by the Roman Catholic Church. We got into the Civil War. The Civil War was split north and south. And the assassination of Abraham Lincoln at the end of the war was a plot put forth by the Roman Catholic Church. Everybody that was a member of that plot was a Roman Catholic. Two of the men that escaped got into Canada and got back to Europe and were both part of the Vatican Swiss Guard in the Vatican. There's a book in the bookstore back there. There's two books. One of them is 50 Years in the Church of Rome, which is about that thick. This guy put out by a guy by the name of Chickwick or Chickwack or Wacker Chicker or whatever his name is. I got to tell you, it is the hardest book you're ever going to read in your life. And it deals with the Roman Catholic Church behind the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. May I suggest to you, if you want to get all the information that you need without wasting all of the time, there's a little comic book in there put out by Jack Chick that is on the Roman Catholic plot to kill Abraham Lincoln. It's concise. It's got neat little pictures in it, and it's everything that you could ever get out of the book without wasting all the time on the book, believe me. And you will find in that they were behind it. Time has a way of erasing things. Back in the day of the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, it was very much an understanding that the Roman Catholic Church was behind it. This is what has led to, in the early end of the 1800s and the beginning of 1900s, why this country hated the Catholics so much. But that all gets lost in time. And of course, when the Civil War started, the Pope at that particular point in time recognized the Southern Confederacy and Jeff Davis and sent a letter to him encouraging him to split with the North. And the reason was that they were looking again to get back into America through the South, which was always somewhat sympathetic, being New Orleans down there close in the Jesuit movement. And of course, all this is lost to history. So you're going to see that all this takes place. Now, I gave you those two examples, and then I'm going to make another statement. A number of years ago, I did a very long deal. I forget how many weeks it was. I was a lot younger back then. But I did a series on who killed JFK. And the assassination of John F. Kennedy is one of the great mysteries of our time, which is really not much of a mystery. And in that story, it's on video and there's also a book out, I think. And in that, I go through methodically and show you much of this material and how it leads up to our war in Vietnam and also what took place with the assassination of Kennedy and why. So let me go back and begin to put it all together for you. In 1917, we have what we know from history as the Bolshevik Revolution. Russia got into the war as an ally with America, Britain, and then had to pull out because the Russian Revolution took place. The Russian Revolution that took place in 1917, it was the beginning of communism in Europe. That same year, in a place called Fatima, Portugal, three little children, Portuguese children, saw a vision in the sky. And Mary appeared in the sky, the Virgin Mary, and gave them three predictions or promises that was going to happen. And one of them was the fact that the Roman Catholic Church was going to be God's instrument to eradicate the world from communism. And years later, or I don't know how many years later, these three little gals, I think they all became nuns, or at least a couple of them did. They told the Pope the secret. Back then it was a secret. They didn't get in the newspaper. These are the three things they told me. It was a secret. But they revealed them to the Pope. And obviously, when the Pope heard that the Roman Catholic Church was going to be the instrument of God to end communism, that kicked it all off. And this started the Roman Catholic Church on a campaign to stop communism. And of course, after World War I, communism was in its infant stages. You had the Communist Party. I mean, watch Dr. Zhivago. I know it's a goofy love story, but it gives you a good sense of what was happening at the time. There was rival factions, but it was taking a hold. Europe was in a great economic disaster after World War II. And communism, as Christianity, always gains ground when a natural disaster has taken place because people are looking for change. And that's why, as Christians, when a natural disaster takes place, it's a great opportunity to reach people for Christ because they're hurting and they're looking for something different. But it's also good for communism or really anything else. And, you know, so what happened was the communists began to rise. And in Germany, communism was beginning to get a foothold. And at the time in Germany, this would be 1930s, von Hindenburg was the president of Germany. And along with that, there was a young political guy coming up on the scene who had been a corporal in World War I, had been gassed in the Battle of the Marne, had the Iron Cross first class and second class, and he was making a rise in Germany. He looked around and he saw what was happening to his country. And this young man's name was Adolf Hitler. He begins to form the Nationalist Socialist Party, which later becomes known as the Nazis. And actually, that's why the Germans lost World War II. They tied their shoes in little Nazis. It's right here in my notes. Don't forget to tell this story. So he comes to rise, and what happens is that he's anti-communist. Where Hindenburg was old and ready to die, Adolf Hitler was the young branding firestone that Germany needed. So the Roman Catholic Christian Businessmen's Association, which is very strong in Germany, worked a deal to get Adolf Hitler in as Chancellor of Germany. So now you have the President and the Chancellor. And a little time later, it was the Catholic businessman that got him into power in Germany. And they got him into power because of this little Fatima deal that they were going to, Catholic Church was going to eradicate communism. And the Pope, as always down through history, always used military might. Adolf Hitler was a Roman Catholic. He has around him 12 men who, as a type of the Antichrist, and he's the greatest type in the 20th century. If you would go back in the records, you would find that when his Nazi party was forming out, they didn't have a lot of members. And so when they gave out the membership cards, they fudged on the numbers to make it look like they would do more. Adolf Hitler's number on his party card was 555. The next one coming up after him will be 666. And then the real one coming up after him will be 777. So he's Roman Catholic. All of his disciples are Roman Catholic. Adolf Hitler said, "I was born Catholic and I will die a Catholic." Now, he killed 6 million plus Jews in the concentration camps. He also killed 8 million Russians, much more than them. And we don't even want to count the Poles, the Slavs, and and all the other ones he killed. Yet he's never excommunicated from the Catholic Church. At the end of World War II, the SS, which was his elite Schutzstaffen, or his Jesuits, they were to Adolf Hitler what the Jesuits are to the Roman Catholic Church, them and the Gestapo. There's a great push to get them and put them in custody after World War II because of the atrocities that they did. Most of them escaped to South America, a Roman Catholic country. They got there, and this was in the Kansas City Star about 10 or 15 years ago. They got there through a monastery in Germany with forged papers from the Vatican dressed as priests that smuggled them into Roman Catholic South America, which a moment when they got there, they all took up their old trades working with the totalitarian governments down there in teaching them how to, be better at what they do, killing people. So this is where Eichmann was taken from. This is where Klaus Barbie was taken from. This is where Joseph Mengele, who was the angel of death in Auschwitz, this is where he was. Many of them got down there. And some of them they got, and some of them they didn't. But the Roman Catholic Church backed Adolf Hitler because Adolf Hitler was against communism. And one of the first things that he does, pushed on, this would be Pope Pius X now, was attack Russia. This would be Operation Barbarossa, 1941. He attacked Russia, and winds up by the middle of World War II and toward the end, getting defeated desperately at Stalingrad, and then at the end, it is a total disaster. 600,000 German soldiers of the 6th German Army went into captivity in Stalingrad at the end of that battle. 10 years after World War II, 3,000 of them came back. The rest of them died in captivity. There's a book you ought to read called Stalingrad. It's probably one of the most best books historically you'll ever written. It's written during that period of time, and it's written by actual German soldiers that was there. I believe it's Stalingrad, The Enemy at the Gates. They made a movie about it. But the movie's nothing like the book. The book is very graphic, and it's excellent, excellent book. So all this happened in World War II because the Roman Catholic Church wanted to wipe out communism, so she linked up with Hitler and, you know, started World War II and attacked in Europe to eradicate not only the communists, but also the Jews. Adolf Hitler wrote a book which became the Bible of every Nazi and every political party leader called Mein Kampf, which is German for my struggle. It became the Bible for National Socialism. Adolf Hitler looked around in the struggling times of his nation, and he saw a nation that had been so severely where it took 50,000 Reichmarks to buy a loaf of bread. That's how bad the Depression was. Yet he saw Jews around him that had more money than they knew what to do with, was buying up property, had gold in their teeth, which they later extracted in the concentration camps. And he blamed all this on the Jew. So he has a two-prong attack. And the Roman Catholic Church was willing, because they've always hated the Jew. It wasn't until Vatican II in the 1960s that the Roman Catholic Church exonerated the Jews from killing Christ. Up to 1960, they blamed them and called them Christ killers. They couldn't get away with it anymore, so they changed it. But there is no love in the Catholic Church for the nation of Israel, actually, because she's Satan's church. Revelation 12 and 13 and Revelation 17 and 18, you can tell your buddy that, shows you how clear that really is. She has no love for the nation of Israel. Roman Catholic Church is willing to put up with anything as long as she gets what she wants out of it. Now, there'll be people on the weather now if I said, well, if the Catholic Church was so against communism, how come so many priests are communists? That's where you make your second mistake. They're not really communists, they're Marxists. That's a big difference. Big difference. But they can be communists too. And the reason is, Catholic Church doesn't care. As long as her agenda gets it done, it doesn't matter. So, she failed in World War II. Adolf Hitler's problem was he took on a three-front war that he couldn't sustain. I mean, it looked good when he started because America was still living in the 20s and she was not prepared for a world war. And when they took out our fleet at Pearl Harbor, I think when World War II started, of course, you know, December 7th, they attacked us, and on the next day, the 8th, in Germany declared war on America. And we, we were woefully not ready. I think in all of our Air Force, we had 15 serviceable planes, and they were outdated by 30 years. We didn't have anything. So it looked like Hitler did a great thing. Hey, in no time, I mean, he took Poland in 3 days. He took Czechoslovakia in a week. His blitzkrieg was just decimated, and he took all of Europe, and the world looked at it as, wow, nobody can stop this guy. That's because we were so unprepared. Once America got cranked up, it was only a matter of time. That little impacted nation, even though he had taken all of Europe, he had to spend a tremendous amount of resources to keep those nations when he had a now America in the war, who, when we got in, and then the British got in, then Australia got in, and then he attacked Russia, and they got in, he just bit off more than he could chew, and he couldn't cover it all. And so, my own personal opinion on it, if he would have left the Jew go, he probably would have got farther along in World War II. But when he started to attack the Jew, then God got involved in it, and it was a thing where you know, the handwriting was on the wall, so to speak. So World War II comes to an end. Now, Germany's defeated. Pope Pius is out in the cold now. He put all his money on Adolf Hitler, and Adolf poo-pooed on him, and now we're in trouble. He commits suicide in a bunker in Berlin, and World War II comes to an end. Now, Russia is victorious. And now we see at this point in time the prophecy in Daniel where the first image was England. England's off now. Now the bear comes on, and it's Russia. And now Russia and communism takes over three-quarters of the known world. But the Roman Catholic Church is never outdone. Most people don't know this. What happened was, when the Japanese in the Middle East took all of these places, Vietnam, Korea, Borneo, Hong Kong, China, all of these places, she did in the Middle East what Germany did in Europe. She took all of that. I mean, she had it all. But what happened was, at the end of the war, Japan now had to get out, and communism moved right in. Vietnam was run by the French. You're going to find that the British had places, as the other French did in other places. Now the French and the British try to come back in, but the people had just fought the Japanese for their independence. They don't want Westerners coming in anymore. So they find help with, yes, the communists who come down, and they all become communists. So 2 years after World War II is over, we're fighting in Indochina. We're not, but the French is. Because the French are trying to defeat the communists in Vietnam. And about 1950, they're fighting a war in Indochina, but nobody cares about it over here because we just finished the big one and we're not interested in that one. But France is in it up to her neck. This is where she's fighting the Viet Cong. The Viet Cong are communists. Communists now has come into Vietnam and they have taken it over, and the French are trying to keep them out. Same way in Korea, except it wasn't the French. The Korean communists come down in Korea, and through the battle lines that happen, the countries get divided. Now you have a North Vietnam and a South Vietnam. Now you have a North Korea and a South Korea. North is communist. South is not communist. And so it's a thing where in the 50s, when the French were fighting in it, the French got decimated in World War II. They had nothing to fight that war with. And during that war, because of the Pope Pius now is in, Pope Pius X now is in, through that influence in this country that I'm going to show you in a few minutes, he shifted from Germany to America. And now where Germany was going to be the one who fought and stopped the Russians, now it's going to be America. And in that time, every government agency in America falls under the influence of the Vatican. Every key person in our government is Roman Catholic. And there is an archbishop in New York who is the key to the Vatican, to our Spellman, Archbishop Cardinal Spellman. He is the key to everything that's going on between the Vatican and in our government. You had Admiral Kirk, not the one in Star Trek, but the one in history, who is the head of the American Legion. He's Roman Catholic. You had Eugene McCarthy, who went on a witch hunt through this country and our government trying to root out communism. He's a Roman Catholic. You had J. Edgar Hoover, who's an Episcopalian, who hated communism. You had Attorney General McGrath, who was a Roman Catholic. You had Francis Matthews, who's the Secretary of the Navy, Roman Catholic. You had Father Welsh, who was the Jesuit, who's the Jesuit father over Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. You had George Craig, who later on became head of the Nation, American Legion, who is also a Roman Catholic. You had Mark Clark, who is a general in World War II, who's over all the NATO forces, who is Roman Catholic. You had John Dulles, who is the Secretary of Defense. He's Roman Catholic. His brother, Alan Dulles, is head of the CIA. They both have a son who is a Jesuit priest. These are who are running our government through the strings being pulled with Cardinal Spellman back to the Vatican, all the way back to Fatima, Portugal, and Our Lady of Fatima. And she is pulling the strings so America in the 1950s, even though we're not involved in the war yet, we are funding 90% of that war over there in Vietnam for the French because of what's going on in our country and how the Roman Catholic Church has switched now from what she was doing with Adolf Hitler. And by the way, Adolf Hitler, and I told you before, Adolf Hitler, his SS troops were the main battle axe for his war. They kept everybody in line. They had to prove their Nordic German ancestry back to the 1700s, that they were pure Aryan. Adolf Hitler's goal was to have a thousand-year Reich, a fake millennial reign of Christ. He wanted to fill it with Nazi supermen, just like they were in Genesis chapter 6. He makes an allegiance with the Grand Mufti of Arabia, who is a Muslim. They both hate communists. And they both hate the Jews. They make an alliance together that the SS troops are getting depleted because they're getting killed more and more all the time. So he gets the Grand Mufti of Arabia to put together SS divisions that are not Nordic and German, but are Muslim division. They call them the Handschar division. And there was 8 or 9 SS divisions that were strictly made up of Muslims. They fought the Russians on the Russian front. So don't tell me the Roman Catholic Church and the Muslims can't get together. They got together more than once. And they will get together again. France gets her rear end kicked in Indochina. She loses that war. And they beat them bad. So what happens now? What happens now is America picks up the gauntlet because of the pressure from the Vatican, Pope Pius the 12th now, to pick up that war and to stop communism. And we lost in World War II 250,000 young men, all because of Lady Fatima and a war to stop communism orchestrated in Europe anyhow by the Roman Catholic Church. When the Vietnam War came, we lost 25,000 of our young men, prime young men, in a war that were orchestrated by the Roman Catholic Church to stop communism. So what happens is this. We get involved in Vietnam. Vietnam now is divided north and south. We have a president in Vietnam, Bai Odea, who is the president of Vietnam, and the CIA and our government doesn't want him there anymore because he's anti-Catholic. So our CIA goes in, dethrones him through a coup d'etat, and puts another guy on the throne, and it'll be a guy by the name of Diem. Now, Diem was a Roman Catholic. He studied for the priesthood, failed at that, went into private exile for 15 years. John F. Kennedy met him, as all of the great senators, saw his worth, sent him to Georgetown University, where he was trained by the Jesuits and ready to go. They lift him out of Georgetown University, Father Welsh, take him over there, kick out the president, and establish him as a new president of Vietnam. And his brother becomes the head of the secret police. His other brother is an archbishop in the Roman Catholic Church. He's the Archbishop of Hue, which is a town in South Vietnam. So now he's in there. He is rabid Roman Catholic. He not only wants to stop communism, he wants to wipe out the Buddhist. So he starts persecuting the Buddhists, and he starts doing everything that he can to closing their temples, persecuting them. This is why, and I talked about this the other day, this is why so many of them would go out in the street, sit down, pour gasoline on them. All the news cameras of all the news outreach would film it. They'd set themselves on fire and sit there and burn quietly in protest to the Roman Catholic Church persecuting their church through Diem. Well, we had everybody in our government, was Roman Catholic, except one guy. We needed a Catholic president. And in 1960, John F. Kennedy became our first Roman Catholic president. There's a lot of speculation about his daddy, who was, during World War II, the ambassador to England, who was a bootlegger in the 20s and the 30s, and was a pretty shady character, but had made millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars through the gangster movement, bought the election for him. I have no proof of that, but I would bet my last bottom dollar on it. And it's a thing where now we have a Catholic president, the scene is complete. Now we have a complete Roman Catholic government in America with a Roman Catholic president, all of them, before their allegiance to this country, they are allegiance to their church. You have Cardinal Spellman in New York, and you have Pope Pius over here pulling the strings back and forth. And our government is going back and forth, meeting with the Vatican. Cardinal Spellman has more meetings with our government than any in history. And they're orchestrating this war in Vietnam to end communism. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that all of these people bought into the Fatima deal. I'm telling you, they are loyal to their church. And the Jesuits had infiltrated our government just like they infiltrated the churches during the Oxford movement and the Counter-Reformation, or every Bible college in this country. The same way, that's what they do. And now this country is doing the bidding. The CIA under Alan Dulles wants to overthrow Castro, Roman Catholic, in a Catholic country. So the CIA gets together a bunch of Cuban rebels, trains them in Florida at an American military base, arms them, gets them ready to go to make an invasion on Cuba, and bring it to the president, President Kennedy. Didn't tell him the whole truth. He signs off on it because they lied to him. And then when the Bay of Pigs goes down, that's what it was called, they attack the beach. The Cuban soldiers are Russian-backed. They're putting more pressure on them than it can be. And without an airstrike, without American planes flying to bomb those Cuban forces, they are not going to succeed. So the CIA now has to go back to Kennedy, tell him what they did, and he is outraged. And here it comes. He did not send the planes in. And those Cuban forces were taken capture, most of them killed or tortured or put in prison. And the CIA never forgave Kennedy for what he did. Kennedy never forgave them for what they did, and he vows that he is going to dismantle the CIA. The war in Vietnam, is moving rapidly. And we're at a stalemate. It's a political war that it's impossible to win because it was a religious war. And it's all fought for the wrong reasons. And our boys are out there dying and shedding their blood so the Roman Catholic Church can fulfill what the little Portuguese girls saw in Fatima and try to make things okay. And of course, it just didn't work. John F. Kennedy, about a month before he's assassinated, I heard the speech on television. He signs a decree that he's going to pull out the troops out of Vietnam. His famous speech was, and he ended it this way, at the end of the day, it's their war, they have to fight it. And he's actively signed that he's going to pull out the troops out of Vietnam. 1 month later, he is assassinated. The moment he's assassinated, his predecessor, Lyndon Johnson, rescinds that order and puts America back in Vietnam, commits another 25,000 troops, and we're in there another 10 years, and lost 25,000 of our finest young men. And it's a situation where the Catholic Church got rid of him, just like they got rid of, and the week before Kennedy goes down, the CIA, the same CIA who goes in and destroys Bayo Dio and puts Diem in, now Diem has turned into a mad dog and he's killing everybody. So they go in and they put another coup d'etat to overthrow him. And then a week later, Kennedy is assassinated in Dallas. And we know how the war and Johnson got us back in the war. But again, it was a very unpopular war in America. And nobody wanted to fight it. Certainly nobody wanted to win it. And we saw what happened in 1976, 77, when American troops had to pull out. And now all of Vietnam has went communism. And she lost again. Now, along with that, we see another event arising that runs parallel to this. And that will become, in 1948, the nation of Israel becoming a nation. So things begin to change drastically in the world when that happens. And this is why you see the Cold War coming to an end, and the Muslims now, and the religious war shifting from a Catholic war to a Muslim war. And it's because now that the nation of Israel is now going, has become a nation. This is the last prophecy before the second coming of Christ given in the Bible. And you can see things begin to expedite very quickly from this point on. And this brings us up to where we're at today. The Roman Catholic Church again has went dormant. And she's went dormant. Now she's working underneath again, as she has done all through history, to bring about her connection with the Muslims. And at some point in time, they will all hook up together, and it'll be against the nation of Israel. Whether this is before the rapture or after the rapture, I can't say. But it's very clear where this thing is going. Once you get into the Bible and you let the Bible define history for you for what it has been, it's easy to see where it's going. The problem is men never learn anything from history, therefore they never learn anything about history. So they make the same mistakes. And you see that this country and everything we did in the 20th century was by the bidding of the Roman Catholic Church, as she infiltrated everything in this world. As the communism was infiltrating the other half of the world, she was infiltrating the other half to stop it. And she used nations, armies, warfare, just like she did all the way down when she was trying to wipe out the Albigensians, the Waldensians, and all the Bible-believing groups. Nothing ever changes. So when you see that, you understand. Now, the assassination of John F. Kennedy is a study unto itself. I think it would be safe to say anybody who's got any brain cells would know that Lee Harvey Oswald did not come anywhere near killing President in Dallas that day. It's very clear that he was worked for the CIA, that he was recruited while he was a young Marine in Japan and sent into Russia to gather information under a program that they had. It was a clear where in the 1976 second deal that the government had to admit and recognize that he was on their payroll. And he was groomed for that to be like the lone nutty guy. You're going to find that everything around him was centered in New Orleans, where the Jesuits have their hotbed. And everybody connected with him was Roman Catholic, one way or the other. And it's a situation where you see how it all worked. And, you know, when he was taken into custody, you know, he said, "I'm a patsy." And, and nobody paid much attention to that. But years later, with all the information that comes out, it's pretty easy to see. you know, no matter what our government says or what anybody tries to whitewash it, there's enough material out there that is documentary or even in movies that is based on historical fact that shows you that he most likely had no connection to it. And most connection, he probably thought he was working with the CIA to stop the assassination of the president, was put into places and then set up for that, and you know, it goes from there. I pay attention to detail. The rifle that he used had to be the worst rifle on the planet ever created. It was an Italian 6.45 Carcano, which is a piece of junk. All the FBI guys who were sharpshooters shot from the same depository building at sandbags at the same distance. None of them could do what he did. The famous magic bullet theory that there was only three shots fired when actually there was at least four or five. The Zerubbabel film, who was locked away in a vault for years and years and years that they had to subpoena it to get it, Jim Garrison. That was the only photo movie I've taken, and I have a copy of it. It only lasts about 20, 30 seconds. And it showed the fatal headshot that came from the grassy knoll. The Degrassi knoll headshot was denounced because if that was true, then Lee Harvey Oswald was not the only shooter. And yet, when you look at the Zerubbabel film, when he's coming down the parkway there, the last shot is fired, blows the front and top of his head off, and pushes his head back, not forward. I was home that day. I was in the eighth grade. I was homesick. And I was watching television when the news came on, Walter Cronkite. And the original report was that the president had been shot, shots were fired, and people were running toward the shots that were fired from the grassy knoll. That was the first report that came out. Later, they denounced all that, and they could not have any shots fired from the grassy knoll because that would be a conspiracy, and then Lee Harvey Oswald, and that would open up a whole other can of worms. So it's a thing where, you know, when he got taken into custody, and I'm a detail guy. So they're showing all the weapons that he has. And they're holding up the Carcano, which he got from Klein's in Chicago. It was back in the day. Remember Klein's? You could buy rifles. You could buy M1 carbines for $11 a piece. M1 Grands, which now sell for about $3,000, you could buy for $18, $19. I mean, it was a Christmas dinner for gun buffs. He bought this Carcano from them. The scope was off. They never found any fingerprints on the gun from him, other than after they had it for 5 or 6 days, and then they found a palm print on it. They missed it for 4 or 5 days. Yeah, right. They did a nitric test on his hands. He hired and fired a gun that day. And so, and then conveniently, before he can open up, guess who shows up? Yeah, who's another Roman Catholic connected with New Orleans and the gangsters and the mobsters out of that place. And he silences him forever, and then he dies. So, but anyway, they're showing all this stuff, and I'm sitting there, this is years later, and I'm sitting there, and I'm watching this thing, and they hold up the pistol that he used, that he was carrying. And when I saw that, I just about dropped my teeth, because there in front of me, he had a Smith & Wesson 2-inch Model 10 that was Parkerized, that was only issued in that day and age, the CIA guys. That was their standard weapon. The military had a 4-inch Model 10 called a Victory Model, but the CIA was issued a short barrel of that 2-inch Model 10, Parkerized, plain grips, and that was standard issue to every CIA guy. And here is Lee Harvey Oswald carrying one. It's a joke. And it all goes back to the fact that, you know, after that, then we see, you know, the devil, He got out of, he had a really fast car there for he drove up to the 1960s. It was a little black Corvette. And then when Kennedy got killed, he jumped out of that and jumped into his Jaguar. And now he's driving through history with the Jaguar Muslims. And it's a thing where it just shifted gears. So all history in the 20th century revolves around what I just told you. And I just give you the surface. I haven't got into all of the details and all of the stuff that went on and all of the things that happened. I mean, that's just an overview of it. But everything in our century, and if you don't have that piece of information, then it's hard to figure out why things are the way they are. It's hard to figure out why, you know, that our own government now is turning toward anti-Semitism against the Jews. And it's because that the senators and the congressmen that we have now are all the guys that back in the day were the ones that were arguing against Vietnam and the protesters and the ones that it was against what us going to war because it was an immoral war. And nobody had a clue that it was an immoral war, but it was an immoral war because it was started by the Roman Catholic Church to bring about the downfall of communism on a worldwide based on some little vision that three children had in Portugal in 1917 who told the Pope, and then he made it his decree. And he made an alliance with Hitler. He made an alliance with Mussolini. He never spoke out against the Japanese. He made an alliance with everybody in history and used their armies to end those communists and threat. And when he got into our government through the Jesuits and orchestrated everything, all they needed was a Catholic president to put it all together. Kennedy was a good man. He wasn't going to allow himself to be used by the Roman Catholic Church, though he was a Roman Catholic. The word is that Billy Graham won him to Christ. I hope that was true. Billy Graham had a unique opportunity back in the day to witness to all the presidents, most of them anyhow. And it has been said that John F. Kennedy, in the privacy with Billy Graham, trusted Christ as his own personal Savior. I hope that be the case. But I do know this. He did not bow to the popery in Rome. He was an American, and he held true to American values, and he was not going to send his people back in. Now, whether he knew about all this, I doubt that he did. From him, it was a political move. But it was the right political move because he knew he was in a war that he couldn't win. And he knew that around him was people that he couldn't trust. And after the Berlin missile Cuba missile crisis and the Bay of Pigs, it was very clear the handwriting was on the wall that Kennedy had to go. He was going, and then when he signed that decree that he was going to pull out of Vietnam, that was the end. And he had to go. And then immediately Johnson is put in, and Johnson signed. Now I'm not going to sit here and tell you Johnson was part of the plot. A lot of guys think he was. I personally don't think he was. I think you had a very small group that was run by the Jesuits. Probably the mafia was involved. That's probably where the shooters came from. Because they're all Roman Catholic. And I think that it worked its way through that system. JFK, or Johnson, was just a political mover. He looked at advantages. And he saw the war in Vietnam as an economic boost to America because they were buying, America's prosperity was off the roof because we were making everything for that war. And he kept it going. I may be wrong on that, but I've never seen any evidence that he ever was. And a lot of guys put him into conspiracy because there's a lot of guys, because they were part of it after the fact, that looks, they, people think they were part of it before the fact. And that may not be necessarily true. I think that you're going to look real close to the people in our government that were connected to the Roman Catholic Church through the Jesuits' connections in their own families, through Cardinal Spellman, going back to the Vatican. And that would be a short list. But it has, and you can't, somebody says, oh, the mafia. You don't understand. Our CIA hired the mafia back in the 60s to try to take out Castro. Our CIA hired the mafia back in the 60s to try to take out Castro.
Right.
So CIA and the mafia getting along together was not a new thing. People hear that and they say, oh, that's just blah. No, no. Our CIA, Central Intelligence Agency, used the mafia to try to get rid of Castro. So they were in bed together for quite a while. So anyway. Well, we'll hold up there. That's